Guys, I'm on cloud 9.
Oh, why, Annie? Is it because since we announced our BSOW Network Patreon featuring extra episodes and bonus content every month, we've been seeing tons of downloads already?
Well, yes, of course. That feels good and all, but it's...
Or is it because we receive lots of support and encouraging comments from our faithful listeners? Like this one from Mr. Jay Hammerling that says, "A whole show of tangents? Thank you."
Sure, that's awesome.
Oh, wait. Is it that BSOW Network is super easy to find by going to patreon.com and simply searching for BSOW Network?
Yeah, all those reasons are great, you guys, but the real reason why I'm on Cloud 9 is I've just loved exploring the houses of the Fab Five and their friends, and especially Minnie's house. She's my girl.
Oh, that. Of course. How could we forget?
Well, I gotta say, as much as I've loved touring Mickey and Minnie's houses and Goofy and Donald's and Pluto's place as well, I just really need to get on a ride.
Whoa, you are striking a chord with me, Al. If I remember right, besides Gadget's Go Coaster, which I don't fit in, it's been 13 episodes since we've explored a Disneyland ride.
Ooh, 13. That's bad luck.
Well, maybe, but at least we're in luck now, because the only attraction left to tackle in Toontown is Roger Rabbit's Cartoon Spin.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, I can't wait to stand in a queue, pull down a lap bar, and watch a cast member signal that we're clear for launch.
Me too. It's been so long, you guys, I kind of wonder what it will feel like to let the Disney magic whisk me into another amazing adventure.
Oh, and this one's a doozy. I know Roger Rabbit's Cartoon Spin doesn't land on anybody's top 10 list most of the time, but I gotta tell you, this ride has some of the best visual effects around.
Oh, and don't get me started on the ride system.
Hey, don't forget that queue.
Oh, this one has it all. But before we head over there, let's talk a bit about the ride and its origins, shall we?
We shall. So the story behind Roger Rabbit's Cartoon Spin reads a bit like a film noir crime drama.
Just like the novel he debuted in, Who Censored Roger Rabbit, by Gary K. Wolfe. The story of the Disney-Spielberg joint film venture is a detective's tale of intrigue, backstabbing, front-stabbing, and betrayal that could make a Hollywood gumshoe blush.
Well, we tell the whole story in two different episodes of the show. First, in our Mickey's Toontown episode, and secondly, in our BSOW Patreon channel's Did You Know Disney Legends series about Michael Eisner.
But for now, all you need to know is that the character of Roger Rabbit was extremely popular and therefore valuable to any movie studio who could get their hands on him. Sounds a whole lot like a movie plot, doesn't it?
And once the film was made and Disney got the rights to him, Michael Eisner, Disney's CEO at the time, wanted to put the company's famous synergy to the test and firmly establish Roger Rabbit as a fixture in the Disney parks.
Again, you can go back to listen to our Mickey's Toontown episode for the juicy details, but Eisner's first impulse was to create an entire new land based solely on the Roger Rabbit characters. Imagineers would call it Hollywood Land and locate it right behind Main Street, USA.
Now, although this land never came to be, one of the three rides developed for the land, Baby Herman's Runaway Baby Buggy, kept rising to the top of conversations as a ride that just had to get built.
Before long, dreams of a brand new land in Disneyland would finally materialize, the first since Bear Country was added in 1972, this time featuring Walt's superstar Mouse. Instead of Eisner's rising star Rabbit, we got Mickey's Toontown with Walt's rising top star Mickey.
And what an amazing land it was. You can listen back to our previous Toontown episodes and hear about all the amazing details that the Imagineers put into each of the houses we've visited so far.
But one thing was missing when the land opened in January 1993.
Yes, an e-ticket attraction.
That's right. Without an exciting anchor attraction, the land would be merely a series of walkthroughs and interactives. It needed a wild ride that everybody would want to pay admission just to experience.
So, enter the Imagineers, right?
Yes, Annie, but let's take a step back for a second. A lot of times on this podcast, we like to throw around stories of the Imagineers this and the Imagineers that, but we rarely mention any of them by name.
Sure, we drop names like Mark Davis and Rolly Crump, Mary Blair and X Atencio, but those are the old guard, the originators of the craft.
And we tell tales of some of the modern superstars of Imagineering, like Tony Baxter and Joe Rohde, but those are usually the only ones most Disney fans know about. This time around, I want to introduce you to an Imagineer who's crucial to the story of Toontown and the Roger Rabbit ride. Joe Lanzicero is a name most Disney fans don't know, but honestly, they should. Why? Well, Joe has a reputation for being the guy they go to when they want to add a whole new land to a Disney park. He led the charge adding lands like Toontown, Toy Story Land, Grizzly Gulch, and Mystic Point to Disney parks around the world.
And not just lands, Freddie. Joe also added lands to the sea.
I don't follow you.
All right. Joe Lanzicero was also responsible for the design of the two Disney Cruise Line ships.
I see what you did there. He's also depicted as a member of the SEA, just like Tony Baxter and Joe Rohde. You can see Joe's face in a Mystic Manor portrait as SEA member J.L. Batterista.
Okay, so this Joe Lanzicero character is a pretty amazing guy. He led the development of Toontown Imagineering, right? So, did he direct the design of Roger Rabbit's cartoon spin, too?
Exactly, but he didn't do it on his own. Joe had a great team with him, great Imagineers most Disney fans do not know, including Marcello Vignali, Art Verity, and Andrea Favilli. But you need to know one more thing about Joe. Before he came to Walt Disney Imagineering, Joe was an animator at Walt Disney Feature Animation.
Whoa, wait, so you mean he was an animator before an Imagineer? That is so cool. That definitely harkens back to the original animators Walt pulled over to build his little dream park back in the 50s.
That's right. Walt saw many of the skills he would need to build Disneyland and his animators and filmmakers at the studio. In fact, he would just call them away from projects on a whim to have them help him with a little thing here and there. And before they knew it, they had become full-fledged Imagineers.
Yeah, Disney legends like Mark Davis, Ward Kimball, Mary Blair, X Atencio, and so many more brought their skills from animation and used them to bring Disneyland to life.
So true. Joe is cut from the same cloth as those legends. He graduated from CalArts, that's the fine arts college Walt Disney helped develop to supply his studio with a well-trained workforce. He said he graduated on a Thursday, and like a dream come true, he found himself in the apprentice room of Walt Disney Feature Animation the following Monday. Can you imagine that?
That is crazy. I actually did not know that that CalArts was linked to Walt Disney.
Yeah, there you go,
Very
Andrea.
Very cool. Joe worked under many of Walt's original animators and contributed to Disney classics like The Fox and the Hound, The Black Cauldron, and The Great Mouse Detective.
Now, I can't confirm this on IMDb, but I did read somewhere that Joe worked on the Roger Rabbit film, too, which would be incredibly poetic if it's true.
Yeah, sure would be. We should ask him.
Maybe someday, Annie. Maybe someday very, very soon.
Well, back to the ride. Roger Rabbit's cartoon spin opened in January 1994, 1 year after Toontown opened, finally giving the land its signature attraction.
Ooh, I've got a great idea, guys. Let's make our way over there now.
Yeah, okay, great idea.
Oh, cool, a city tour guide. I love these guys. Whenever I'm in a new town, I join a tour or maybe grab a hop-on, hop-off bus. It gives you a real sense of the people and places.
Yeah, sounds fun.
Come on, Freddy. Let's just get to Roger Rabbit and get moving on to Tomorrowland.
Really, Al? I think we might learn a lot. Besides, at the beginning of our journey through Toontown, remember, I asked you to take a left? I wanted us to do that on purpose because it sets us up to understand a bit of the conflict and complexity that makes Toontown a little more interesting than many people take for granted.
I don't remember that.
Annie, you were back in 1964, remember?
That I remember.
Yeah, we started out exploring the neighborhoods out near the countryside of Toontown, you remember? And you'll remember that Goofy's house is in the farmland.
Oh yeah, that's right. He's even got that little farm out back.
Yep. Then we went on to Donald's house, which was on Toontown Lake.
Okay, I remember that. Donald's boathouse is moored in the marshland where Gadget's go-coaster backs up to Chippendale's stately oak tree house.
And at the end of town, we got to see some of the nice suburban housing developments of Toontown up against the rolling green hills.
I'll never forget meeting Mickey in his house.
Oh, it really was a dream come true. But I don't want to go on a tour. I'm done with tours. I want to go on a ride.
Okay, guys, come on. Pull it together, Al. Okay, look. Isn't The Backside of Water supposed to be a podcast that delves into the rich history, awesome stories, and fascinating details behind your favorite Disney attractions?
Yeah.
Well, what if this tour guide can give you a fascinating detail that you didn't know about that would make this episode even better?
It's probably just a little dumb fact.
Al, you don't know that, and I'm sure there's plenty to learn. Now, don't you think we can join the tour for just a few minutes?
I guess so. I think I've just got low blood sugar. I'm sorry for being a cotton-headed mini-mug.
You're not. I know how you feel, pal. I really want to get on a Disneyland ride now, too. More than I think I ever have.
Let's go see what this tour guide has to say.
Let's go.
As we travel west from Mickey and Minnie's cul-de-sac, we see a jolly trolley stop there by Toontown's musical fountain. Every splash is a symphony. Incidentally, the jolly trolley service was discontinued in 2003 due to town budget decline.
Ooh, that's true. Maintenance costs were way too high for an attraction that was so lightly used.
Yeah, and even though it added some nice kinetic movement to the land, it also went right through the most crowded areas. It just makes sense to leave the trolley in one place as a photo op.
These days, the city fathers have decided to dedicate Toonspitation dollars toward support of private taxi services to quell traffic. We're told there will one day be a more efficient railway service built here in Toontown, but we'll have to wait and see.
Ooh, guys, I think that she's talking about Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway, which is supposed to open in 2023.
That's gonna be awesome!
Still, many local commuters, the mouse included, choose to use their own vehicles, which is why this is still the busiest service station in town. Of course! Commuters need gas, so naturally Toontown's famous bumpkin entrepreneur, Goofy, would start his own service station there on the edge of town.
Way to go, Goof! Although it looks like he's got the wrong octane in those gas pumps. H2 octane works for aquarium fish, not so much for automobiles.
Now, we find ourselves in the historic center of Old Town Toontown. This area was once just a dusty valley until the first Toons put their roots down and started farming. But when the farmers first started planting, they noticed there was something funny in the water. No matter how hard they tried to farm normal produce, all they could grow was funny fruit and silly stock, like crab apples, banana peels, rhubarb, and orange, you glad I didn't say orange groves.
Who were these old settlers? Porky Pioneer? Daffy Drifter?
Yeah, Felix, the farmer. The wonderful, wonderful farmer.
You guys, she's looking at us. After they settled here, the founding fathers and mothers, sisters and brothers, uncles, aunties, and great-grampy Goontoon erected a city center where they could do business in a growing economy. Here they built City Hall, the courthouse, and the third little piggy bank. Still, others built small businesses to serve the residents and visitors. In the middle of town square is the bandstand gazebo for town gatherings, weddings, and concerts. Windy days are the best days for concerts here. You know, it's a Toontown tradition.
Guys, that's a reference to Mickey's first color cartoon, Mickey and the Band Concert.
Shh!
Ow! On this side of town, you've got the post office, public school, library, dog pound, police, and fire departments to serve the public good. Altogether, we Toons believe we've got a pretty good place for a Toon to call home.
Excuse me.
Yes?
Al, what are you doing?
Yeah, Al, she doesn't look like the kind to take questions.
Guys, something funny just occurred to me.
Of course it did. We're in Toontown.
Yeah, haha. I feel like there's something missing here. It's not like the Imagineers, especially Joe Lanzicero, to leave such a huge hole in the story.
Wait, what hole?
Okay, I can't figure out how this whole town and that huge city behind us was built only on simple funny farming.
Sir, can I help you?
Can I ask a question?
Can I stop you?
probably not. So anyway, I was just wondering, is there something else fueling the fast economic growth here in Toontown beside the funny farming you mentioned? I mean, it doesn't make sense that this huge city behind you was built only on traditional funny farming, amusing agriculture, cornball cultivation, and...
Are you done, sir?
Humorous horticulture. Yes, now I'm done.
Thank you, sir. I think what you're asking is, what is the chief industry here in Toontown? Is that your question, sir?
Oh, I forgot, laughable landscaping. Yes, that's my question.
Sir, I think you're the type who needs a simple illustration.
The simpler the better for old Al.
Freddy?
Sorry, Al.
To be fair, you're not wrong, bud.
Sir, I want you to take a minute to think back to elementary school when you were learning all the names of the states and their capitals. Can you do that for me, sir?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Do you remember looking at a colorful map of the United States that showed cartoon pictures of animals and oil fields over each state?
Ooh, I do remember that. Idaho potatoes, Louisiana jazz, Michigan cars, and Iowa hams.
Hey, Washington apples, Pennsylvania steel, California sunshine, Florida orange peel.
Yeah, very nice. Those are what they call major industries. If Toontown was on the map, it would show a picture of a whipped cream pie, an exploding cigar, or a Jack in the Box.
Oh, I get it. I think I get it. Toontown's major industry is pranks?
Not exactly. I told you there's something funny in the water here, okay? Once miners struck comedy gold in the slapstick strike of 49, they started processing the silly sluice and ironic ore. But it wasn't until they discovered a volcanic river of gag magma running deep under the ground beneath the Grand Tonson Mountains that Toontown's gag production superiority was established forever. And an industry was born.
Golly.
Gee.
Willikers. You can say that again.
Golly.
Gee.
No, leave it to the Toons, sir.
Ah, fooey.
Toons of all stripes, polka dots, and plaids rushed to Toontown to try their luck at silly stardom. And where did they go when they arrived here in Toontown?
Well, that's what I'd like to know.
Back in this alley between the Dog Pound and the Electric Company is Toontown's biggest employer, the Gag Factory. As you know, Toons are known for their masterful talent of pulling probable impossible gags out of thin air, so the Gag Factory naturally attracted unemployed Toons from across the Tooniverse to Toontown. To date, the Toontown Gag Factory can be credited with millions upon billions upon quadrupapazillions of gags in cartoons worldwide. So,
wow.
With jobs galore, a population boom sent Toontown vertical. In this section of Toontown, the skyline is filled with apartment buildings, high-rises, and skyscrapers. Now, Toontown is more than just a town. It's a bustling metropolis, buzzing with Toon activity. Now, over here, we see the Toontown powerhouse.
Wow, Annie, Alex, can you believe it?
Yeah, we just witnessed the whole history of Toontown just by following the stories the buildings are telling.
It's kind of a journey through time from the establishment of a small town to its industrialization and eventual crowded urban cityscape.
That's right. So let's look back for a second. From that little town square, what was once a small town, kind of like Marceline, Missouri or Main Street, USA, they established a booming industry that resulted in exponential growth, turned the town into an urban giant, and now it has a population to match.
I guess the Imagineers had a plan all along. If you're building a fictional town populated by toons of all shapes, stripes, and colors, but you want it to be believable, you have to build the story into the settings.
It reminds me a lot of the story we're going to tell about Main Street, USA when we get there, if we ever get there.
Oh, we'll get there all right, pal. It may take 15 years, but we're gonna get there. And I gotta say, I'm so glad we took the tour. You guys were right.
Well, what do you say now? Why don't we go into the city and catch a cab to see Roger Rabbit?
Oh, I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Toontown tour guide, I thought you were still leading that tour over there.
Oh, it's over. I don't go much further than this. My tour always ends at the edge of the big city.
Oh, but why? Isn't there so much more to see in there?
You would think so, wouldn't you? Toontown is fun and a charming place to visit, but like most big cities, Toontown has its dark side. And the dark side is in the shadowy alleyways and back streets of that kooky city.
Dark side? Do you mean it could be dangerous?
Psh, Freddy, you don't believe that hogwash, do you?
Well, I...
There's something funny in the water, I tell ya. Good night, sir. What do you think, guys? Should we risk it?
I really want to, but there was something in the tour guide's words that makes me hesitate for a second.
I don't care what she says. Guys, I gotta get on a ride. Can we just bite the bullet and go already?
Well, Freddy, we're here, aren't we? And come on, it can't be all that bad. This is Disneyland, right?
See, guys, I told you, it's not so bad in the city. I feel like that Billy Joel dog in Oliver and Company, you know? I want to just jump up there and sing, "What should I worry? What should I care?"
I don't know, Al. Seems pretty rough over here on the east side of Toontown.
Ew. Ew, was that a rat?
Ooh, where?
Over there. That's way too big to be a rat. More like a weasel.
Oh, gee.
Oh, Annie, Freddy, you gotta get over it. We explore every attraction in Disneyland here on the podcast, even the ones on the quote-unquote bad side of town. So quit freaking out and let's do this. Besides, it was probably just somebody's cat.
Here, Oliver. Kitty, kitty, kitty.
Boy, oh boy, this cue line for Roger Rabbit's cartoon spin is sure dark and confusing. Are you sure we're going the right way?
Ooh, that's the beauty of this cue. It's so mysterious and spooky, taking us deeper and deeper into the heart of the city. It really sets the stage for a wild cab ride.
So true. You know, I want to say that Roger Rabbit's cue is one of the first of the new generation of immersive Disney cue experiences, I think. I mean, a lot of times when we're comparing Disneyland with other theme parks, we like to say that Disney is the master at transporting guests into the ride experience via long, highly detailed queues. But when you look around, there's actually not as many of these as you might think, especially over the decades.
Really, Freddy? I'm trying to think, what other rides have extensive queue lines like Roger's?
Well, let's think about that. I mean, I guess you'd have to say the first one would be maybe Haunted Mansion in 1969 with the doorless chamber and the spooky walk through the halls to your doom buggy.
What about Pirates? That opened in 1967.
Oh, yeah, but it really wasn't that much of an immersive queue, was it? I mean, all you do is walk along the side of the flume and get up into the loading dock.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Let's see. Maybe the next one would be Space Mountain in 77?
I'd have to say you're right. I remember being totally freaked out by that queue when I was a kid. I had to take the chicken exit once. If I'm being honest with you guys, that's the truth. But then it wasn't until, what, Star Tours in 1987 that they had another one of those big long queues?
No, that's a good queue.
Totally good queue. Of course, it was built on the bones of the old Adventure Through Inner Space. Hey, Adventure Through Inner Space had a pretty cool one too, with that big shrinking machine and all the tiny shrunken guests.
And that one opened in 1967. So maybe it was the first extensive queue line after all?
I think you might be right. So Star Tours was the last one before Roger Rabbit in 1994. Am I right?
Well, I guess I would say people would also think that Splash Mountain's queue is pretty cool also.
Oh, yeah, I guess that one counts. All right, so there's some pretty cool queue lines at Disneyland, but it's not as many as you'd think. There's only, let's see, I guess that's five before Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, and it's quite the line. The Imagineers really took their storytelling powers to the max on this line. I mean, it's just like wandering through the dingy and narrow back alleys of a city, and it seems to go on forever.
Yeah, it does. I think you age a couple of days going through that queue, actually.
I think that's because you see so many twists and turns, and trouble. There's lots of trouble in the back alleys of Toontown.
Yeah, you got that right. Around every corner you find something else to be worried about in these winding streets.
Plus, there's a lot of characters and Easter eggs from the movie wherever you look. I love the back door of the Ink and Paint Club. If you knock on the door, that big gorilla bouncer from the movie opens the peephole and yells at you and tells you to go away. It's awesome.
I saw you jump, Al. There are cameos from Jessica Rabbit and Baby Herman in there, too. Oh, and the weasels, they're also in there. You can hear them plotting to catch Roger. You know, the tour guide was right. There's a big criminal element over here in the east side of the city.
I've always loved how the Imagineers made it look like everything has a personality. The buildings, the cars, the windows and doors, they all seem to have something a little bit sinister in mind.
Did you ever notice that there are places in the queue where you can peek through knot holes and between wood slats to see the actual ride in motion? I always loved stopping to see other riders going by. It's fun to think that in a few minutes I'll be on one of those spinning by the people in line, too.
Speaking of spinning, this spinning ride system was the first of its kind. Disneyland was already the master of dark rides, as we know, so this ride was going to be a piece of cake. Not so. They really wanted to plus it up to do something unique and exciting that riders would never forget.
Some people with weak stomachs never forget it, I'm sure. What's so cool about it is that it's actually just a happy marriage between two existing Disney ride technologies. It's a hybrid between a basic dark ride and a spinning teacup. In fact, this is exactly what Joe Lanzicero said. We took a teacup one night off the teacup ride, put it on Pinocchio, and went through the ride to see how these two technologies would work together. And it was a marriage made in heaven. Actually, made in Disneyland.
Oh, wow.
That would have been amazing to see.
Oh, my goodness. I would love to have been there. And that kind of thinking ends up paving the way for ride vehicles like the Range Rovers in Indiana Jones and the guest-controlled cars on Buzz Lightyear's Space Ranger Spin and, I guess, the trackless wonder of Rise of the Resistance.
Too true. Oh, we're almost at the front of the line. I'm getting excited.
I think the most important part of the queue is when we discover the dip.
Dip?
Yeah, that's the green glowing sludge in the movie that Judge Doom and his goons cooked up to melt helpless tunes. When you see that giant tank of bubbling dip and the walls it's melting down around it, that's foreshadowing, my friends. That's the Imagineers telling us what kind of trouble we should expect to encounter on this ride.
Oh yeah, nasty stuff. Well, we finally made it back to the cab company, which means...
we're almost to the front of the line, guys.
I love how it's all decked out like a taxicab mechanic's garage. But because it's Toontown, there's a twist. These cars are alive. So, this isn't just a garage, it's more like a locker room for the cabs.
Oh, hey, Freddy, did you see those license plates on the wall? I'm pretty sure they belong to some pretty famous people.
Oh, yeah, I love a good vanity plate.
Oh, there's one... Durland and 1DNP Ter
Wendy and Peter.
Oh, I love that. Wendy and Peter. Oh, I like this one. Captain HK. Captain Hook. Yeah.
Oh, that is so cool. Oh, and look at this one. L Merm 8. I'm assuming for the Little Mermaid. Oh, and look at this one. This is amazing. Zip P D 2 D A. Zippity doodah. Oh, my word. There is so much Disney in six little letters on a license plate.
Of course, they had to include a license plate nod to the original Dark Ride Wild Child, Mr. Toad.
Oh, this is an amazing cue. Dare I say it? A masterpiece.
Well, the true masterpiece in cue magic came just a year later when the Indiana Jones Adventure opened in 1995. That one took cue storytelling to an entirely different plane and set the tone for what would come 25 years later with Smuggler's Run and Rise of the Resistance in Star Wars, Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah, it's so amazing how it transports you body and mind deep into the believable world of Indiana Jones.
Well, we talk a lot about it in our Indiana Jones episode, so go back about 40 episodes or so and check it out.
All that to say, Roger Rabbit's intricate cue set the tone and paved the way for some of the biggest and most amazing cue lines in the world.
Our cab has arrived.
Aha! Benny the Cab. He's so funny in the movies.
Not so fast, Al. Did you see his license plate or name tag? It says Lenny.
Lenny, nah. No, it has to be a typo.
No, it is. It's Lenny. He's Benny's cousin.
But the cab behind ours says Lenny, too. Oh, and the one behind that, too.
Well, Benny's got a lot of cousins named Lenny. There's not a lot of info out there about why the Imagineers didn't have you riding in Benny the Cab. You know, he's one of the key characters in the movie. But I've got a theory. At the start of the ride, we see Benny and Roger spinning in the dip. Now, we can't be in Benny and looking at Benny at the same time, you see.
Well, to be fair, you can if Lenny's got a whole bunch of cousins named Benny.
Touché.
That reminds me, guys. I saw somewhere that Charles Fleischer, the voice of Roger and Benny in the movie, did not voice Roger in the ride, but he did voice Benny. I wonder why that is.
Oh, that's right. Jess Harnell is the voice of Roger Rabbit on the ride, and he's also the voice of Br'er Rabbit on Splash Mountain as well.
That's pretty, Bunny.
I hope there's more of those coming. All right, we'll ignore the pun now because it's going to become addictive, Freddy. But like you said, Annie, Jess voiced Roger on the ride, not Charles Fleischer. So that begs the question, why didn't they have Charles Fleischer do Roger?
Funny you should ask. While researching this episode, I found out that the updated voice of Lenny the Cab was done by a good friend of mine, actually, Brad Abril. We go to the same church. So I checked in with him on this. He said he didn't know why they did it, but he said he always assumes it was a budget issue.
That's right. If Charles Fleischer originated a character on screen, and that character became a huge major motion picture hit, his contract would likely require him to be paid every time the animatronic Roger uttered a word. His voice might make this ride extremely expensive. That might not be the exact reason, but it makes a lot of sense.
I totally agree with you. And there's also a lot of other solid actors who worked on this ride. Some of the best in the voice acting industry, but none of them were the originals from the movie. Marnie Moseman was Jessica Rabbit, not Kathleen Turner, and Jim Cummings played Baby Herman instead of Lou Hirsch.
Oh, and I love Jim Cummings. He's like the voice of my childhood. He's the current voice of Pooh and Tigger. He's also Pegleg Pete and Darkwing Duck and so many more.
Don't forget Ray the Lightning Bug in Princess and the Frog. I love him.
Yeah.
Oh, but Freddy, you said your friend Brad did the updated voice of Lenny the Cab. What do you mean updated?
Well, it's a pretty sad story to tell you the truth. In the year 2000, a 4-year-old boy was badly injured on the ride. He eventually died to complications from the accident 8 years later.
Oh my goodness, that is horrible.
It was a huge story and one that Disney did not want to see happen again. So that's when they started putting together brand new, elevated safety protocols in all the rides to prevent accidents like this from ever happening in the future.
It really is tragic.
Anyway, that's when my buddy Brad was called in to do a whole new safety spiel as Lenny the Cab.
Ah, okay, there's Brad. I mean Lenny, doing the safety spiel now. Lap bar's down. You guys ready for this?
Ooh, I was born ready. Let's do this.
Here we go!
Oh, that was so much fun. I'm so glad to get back on a Disney dark ride after what seems like years of time away.
Me too.
Me three. What was your favorite part?
Oh, my favorite part? Well, to be honest, it's kind of hard to say. I'm still spinning just a little bit. But I'd say that I love the main action of the story. That's what sets our car to spinning right from the beginning. Remember, the moment we see Roger and Benny, the weasels are pouring the dip on the ground, making Benny's tires slip and slide into a spin. Then our cab drives through it, and we start spinning too. I guess what I'm saying is the Imagineers didn't just make a spinning ride for its own sake. They made sure that the story matched the ride system, kind of like Peter Pan or Indiana Jones. Oh, and one more thing before anybody says anything. I like that the ride didn't follow the movie storyline completely. You know, sometimes when they try to follow the exact storyline of the movie, the ride turns out a little predictable and thus boring. And this ride is anything but boring.
That's a good one, Al. There's surprises around every corner on this ride, and I think that's my favorite part of the attraction. All of the crazy gags and inside jokes. They really brought the cartoon world to life for me with gags like the big pie in the face, there's dancing shoes, curveballs, or the spinning birds and bells when Roger gets knocked unconscious. I love that part. That's exactly what I think it must feel like to be a toon after a big hammer is falling on my head. But and of course, how could you not crack up laughing at the scene where we crash through Bolina's China shop?
I love
get
that.
Get it? Bolina China. It's so funny.
I have to say, my favorite part was all the amazing illusions. Like, so many Disney rides have great visual tricks to fool your eye, but this ride is packed full of mind-blowing illusions. That spinning room you mentioned, Freddy, it's really disorienting. But then we come falling down through the clouds as though we've been rocketed into space, and I can't get over how it feels like we're actually falling.
Don't forget to spin your vehicle at that point to look back up at the moon that you're falling away from. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's so cool. But the most incredible illusion on the ride is the portable hole at the end. Just when the weasels are about to spray us with dip, Roger arrives in the nick of time with a crate full of portable holes. He throws one against the wall, and out we go, safe and sound. I still can't figure out how they do it.
Black magic.
That's right.
Arts. Yeah. No, I agree. I think that it's amazing. It's one of the most impossible jokes in cartoons, and yet Imagineers figured out how to pull it off in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, I gotta say, this has been an incredible journey with you two through the wonders of Mickey's Toontown. To be honest, I never once thought it would be this exciting and full of juicy trivia.
I know, Al. It's like this little kiddie land has so much more to offer if you just take time and look at the details.
I bet you that's what a lot of people thought about Disneyland way back when. How could an amusement park for kids be anything more than just corn dogs and noise? Turns out, it can be a whole lot more.
Oh, you are so spot on about that, Freddie. I think the right way to end our time in Toontown is to remember the words of the Imagineer who led the charge, Joe Lanzicero. He said, "The key to Walt Disney's success in animation was his ability to tap into real human emotions and infuse his stories with them." Disney said, "Behind every smile, there's a tear. And behind every tear, there's a smile." Joe goes on to say that this understanding of the human experience made what he did universal. Joe says, "I just took the understanding and tried to apply it to the design of physical worlds. In that regard, it was actually a pretty seamless transition from what I was doing in animation to what I ultimately ended up doing at Imagineering. It was applying the same kind of thinking, just in a different medium. The idea of creating experiences that connect with human beings."
Amen to that.
Ditto.
And that is going to do it for the episode of Roger Rabbit's Cartoon Spin, folks. First and foremost, I want to say a very big thank you to Freddie Martin. Freddie Martin wrote the entirety of this episode, and it's a masterpiece. That's just all there is to it. So, hats off to you there, bud.
Freddie.
Yes, yeah. That was a ton of fun. We joked about it at the very beginning in a very heavy-handed way, which we are prone to do. But we do actually have a new Patreon experience for listeners out there. It is called the BSO Network. Over there, you can get up to 2 different episodes per month of additional content. We've officially moved Did You Know Disney podcast solely and exclusively to Patreon. And we also have our new BSO Backstage podcast, where we delve even further into the attraction that we talk about on that month's episode of The Backside of Water. One thing that I alluded to earlier in the episode is we do have a very, very special surprise coming up for Did You Know Disney, and that is we are actually... Freddie, do you want to make the announcement on this?
Yeah, Freddie, tell us.
Sure. Joe Lanzicero has agreed to come on the show and share some of his stories from building Toontown. So this is going to be a really fun episode of Did You Know Disney.
This is going to be the first time that we actually interview a former Imagineer about the land that we're exploring. And what better way to cap off our exploration of Toontown than to essentially talk to the father of that land. I've got to heavily encourage all of you to go listen to that episode over on Patreon. Now, we are going to be keeping it free and available for people for the first 30 days. But after that 30 days, it's going to go back into exclusively for BSOW Network members. We thought we would give you a little gift. The holiday season's coming up. We figured this is a great holiday season gift for you. And it will give you a taste of what we do back over on BSOW Network.
Hey, you guys! There they are! Let's go get them! Hey, there they are! Go get them!
What's that?
Oh, no, it's the weasels! They followed us out of the city, and they're driving the Dipmobile!
Oh, that's not good. That's not good at all.
We gotta hide!
I got this.
What's that, Annie? A portable hole?
Yes, siree. I swiped it from the crate where Roger saved us. So let's see. Read the instructions. Step 1, fold the hole.
Annie, they're coming quick!
Step 2.
Oh, come on, Annie.
Okay, step 3, recite the safety spiel.
What safety spiel? We gotta go now!
Oh, here it is. Okay, it says, as you enter the hole, watch your head, watch your step. If you happen to miss your head or hit your step, watch your language. Got it.
Guys, we gotta jump now!
Here we go!
Next up, Tomorrowland!